It's quite possible that somebody else in the group has already asked the particular question you've got, or that somebody else already knows the answer. And that will make it easier for us to help you with the harder questions. The second thing you can do is submit a help request on the internet. So there's help requests. There's also on the internet, there's the researcher wiki and the SciWiki, which I understand some of you have seen already. They have a lot of help on there as well. The third thing is, if you can't get to the internet even whatsoever, you can send an email to IT-help, and that gets to all of the system administrators at Perimeter, and one of us will respond to you. Or alternatively, you can come by the office. We're in office 207 in the other building. So I'll just quickly pop off here and show you the internet. Sorry, my laptop's a little tardy. There we go. So when you go to intro.pi.local, this is the page you'll see. And you just log in with your Perimeter username and password. And when you log in, you'll see this page to begin with. All of the IT stuff is down in the lower left corner. And you'll see there's the researcher wiki here. Some of this stuff won't apply to you, but a lot of it will be helpful. So there's stuff on how to request visitors, which is not something that you'll be doing. That's for the postdocs. The next thing is there's the SciWiki here. So it looks like you've already got a lot of stuff up here. So there's lots of help you can get there. And the last thing is the IT help requests. It's also in this lower left corner. And what you do is you just click report issue. I've got a lot more stuff here because I'm managing the tickets and stuff. So just wait for the page to load. There we go. So you can just fill out a category for what type of help request it is. You say whether it's high or low priority. You won't see this section. So you just fill in a subject and a description of your problem. It's fairly straightforward. So the best way for contacting us is the IT help requests, and that's because we can manage the help requests a lot better. So we can assign it if you're asking about Linux issues, that's generally me who takes care of that. So that'll get directly assigned to myself. And it'll get into my to-do list. If it's an email issue, that might go to Han. So it basically has some intelligence as to what category you choose goes to what IT staff. So there are some terminals available that you can use. So there's the machine in this room, which is right here. They're not there yet, but we'll be putting some monitors and keyboards in the basement for if you need a larger screen to group around. At 31 Caroline, there's some kiosks on the second floor mezzanine. I think some of you have used them already. It's basically as soon as you come up the stairs behind the photocopier. There's sort of a couch and a couple machines there. Those are internet only. You can only get to the internet from them. So if you're doing Hotmail email or Gmail email, it works great for that. The other thing is the first floor library at 31 Caroline, the east wall that's towards this building. There's some machines there as well. So I've been asked to give you a little introduction to the command line. So here's how you get to the command line. So in Linux, you just go to the GNOME menu. That's the little icon in the top left. And then you see Applications and Terminal. For Mac users, I see there's a few of you in the audience here. You go to Applications, Utilities, and in there's Terminal. And Windows users, the best thing to do for you is either install Cygwin, or you can get PuTTY and just SSH to the Proteus server, which is the server that's been set aside for Sci students. So basically, a shell, you can read that. What a command line is basically it's a program that you work in that accesses various things on the computer. You can run programs from it. You can do a lot of actual programming within the shell. It can be pretty powerful. The nice thing about using shells is it's low bandwidth, so if you're coming in over a slow connection or if you're coming from the University of Waterloo where your residence is, it's probably the best way to access their stuff. Shells have useful features, so they have file redirection, you can do pipes, you can go back in your command line history. You can do aliases, environment variables to speed things up. Were they doing a tutorial this afternoon on it?
Yeah, basically after the break. I have that here just about finished now.
Yeah.
yeah, a link to a nice online tutorial. We can just work through that.
I think, yeah, this afternoon really.
Yeah, so. You have an example. Do you want to do that now, John?
It's the next slide. Yeah.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, you've already. All right. So I'll bring up. Oh, is it? This is going to be really awkward for me, the way I've got it screen set up. I'll see if I can switch it to clone.
Do something like that.
side?
Well, they don't see it.
Oh,
I've
I see.
Got it,
I got it on the
extended. So I'll just.
So now,
oh.
I guess I better mic myself if we're recording this, apparently. So Callum and Dennis wanted us to try and give an example. Why would you use a shell? And you know, as you saw on the previous slide, when you're doing data processing and you have large data sets, you can't always just, you know, there's different ways to examine data sets, basically. And if they're really large, you can't pull them in and edit them all at once and that sort of thing. So I had a something I had to do last week, and that was basically look at last year's worth of maple logs to figure out how many people have been using maple and, you know, how many unique people, essentially. And so basically what I thought was, as a good example, I'd say, okay, I'm going to show you what this data file looked like, what I would have had to do if I had to do it manually versus using the command line and using some tools to basically solve that same problem. And so that's the idea here. So let me jump to your screen again. Whoops, that's not what I want. So if we take a look at that first line, grep is basically a search tool for you guys that don't know that. I'm saying I want to be case insensitive, so I'm looking for the word PI, or the string PI, in this log file. And then I'm going to take the output from that, and I'm going to pipe it to a command called less. So less is just a pager. So, you know, if I didn't have that, all of the output would scroll by really quickly, and I wouldn't see anything but the last sort of 40 lines of what the program had done. So less is a pager. There's another pager called more. And you'll find that a lot of the Unix commands are sort of funny, right? So more was the first pager that was available with Unix. And then somebody said, oh, I can write a better version of that, and I'm going to call it less. The nice thing about less is that you can actually back up through your what you've been viewing. So as you page through with the space bar, if you say, oops, I missed something, I need to back up, you know, you can back up a page. So it is less in this case is better than more. So let me jump here to Proteus. So here's the log file that I had to work with. So you can see that, you know, it has a bunch of startup code and the license manager starts up, all that sort of thing. What we're really interested in, though, is that as things are checked out, it says who the user was that checked out a license, and then later on, when it's checked back in, it also says that. So remember, the problem that we're trying to solve here is who are the unique users that have been using Maple? So you've got this huge log file. And when I say huge, there's a command called word count. So this file is 8,432 lines. So it's not something I want to do manually. So I might as well just jump to the grep command and show you what that's going to give us. So this was the first command on that screen. So if I do that, you'll see that it's picked up a few things that I'm not interested in. So maplem.pi.local, so it picked up the string PI there. So that, again, I don't have everything unique that I want here. So I'm just trying to focus on strings of this type eventually. So this was the first cut at narrowing down the data in that file. And that's what you end up getting. So I'm gonna jump back to this one. So we talked a little bit, or Joe mentioned redirection with scripts. So this command here is pipe. For those of you that don't know what that is, it's basically if I have some command and it's going to create output, I can take that output and feed it as input to another program. And you do that with the pipe command. So that's what that symbol is representing. So what I'm saying here is do the search, find all the strings with PI, case insensitive, and take that output, feed it into a pager. So another thing you can do is basically redirect that output to a file. So the greater than command here is redirecting the output from the same search that I just did above and sticking it into a file called JHM. So now, basically, I've taken the search, dumped that into an intermediary file. What I want to do now is use a program called awk. And awk, you may or may not end up ever using it, but it's very handy at doing string manipulation. And so the command here is to say, I'm running awk. I'm using this as the command program file for awk, telling it what to do, essentially. So dash F is input from a particular file. I'm applying it to the data file that I created in the step above. And then I'm redirecting that to another output file. So I'll just show you what that little awk file looks like. So nothing really fancy. Basically what it's doing is it says for every line in the file, the input file that you send me, I want to take a string, I want to output a string and a new line, and I'm basing it on the fifth element in that file. So by default, awk will parse based on white space. So again, if we go back and we take a look at what that file looked like, every time it sees a space, it's going to count that as another argument. So this is the first one, second, third, fourth, fifth should be this data that I'm interested in. And so essentially what we're doing again is cutting down that data file to just give us the information we're interested in. So I'm going to give you or show you what that gives you. JHM1. So again, it doesn't work perfectly because all of our data wasn't clean up at the top. So you'll see that we've gotten a few things like started, internet on. All of this looks pretty good. And as we go through, you know, some of it's fine, some of it's not. So let me set up the next part here. So again, some of that data that we had wasn't exactly what we wanted. In particular, the first three lines weren't accurate. So I'm going to run it through awk again, but this time I'm going to run a little different program and manipulate the output in a different way. So one of the things that changed between the last one was this capital F. So what that's saying is, instead of using white space to separate the fields, I'm going to use the @ as a separator. And I'll just show you what that little program looks like. Okay, so you'll see that this one's a little bit different than what the last one looked like. The way awk works, it's basically a pattern match and then apply a rule to that pattern. So what I'm doing this time is saying, whenever I see an @ in the whole in that string on that particular line of the file, then apply this particular rule. So what the advantage of this is that the first three lines that didn't have an at sign in it are going to get dropped from the output. So that's what I'm doing here. And I'm just saying I only want the first argument. So remember, it's username at pi.local, something pi local. I'm just grabbing the usernames, okay? So when you run that command, you're going to end up with, you're going to end up with nothing. That's interesting. Why don't I just run it? Okay, so this is the program running. You're seeing now we're getting just usernames, which is what I was after. And as we go through the file, paging through, everything looks pretty good. We mentioned history. So you can see that I just hit the up arrow. It brought back up the command that I just typed. So that's a shortcut. Instead of sending it to less, and this is going to fail, but that's OK, because I want you to see it. OK, so I had a file called jhm2 already. And if you already have a file and you try to output something, redirect output into that, you have to do something special to get it to append to it, or it's going to give you a warning that the file already exists. Now, my file from before was empty, so I have no problem getting rid of it. That's the remove command. And now I'm going to redo that command again. More or less, it doesn't matter. So there's our file. And jhm2 basically has the list of IDs. Now, they're not unique. So the next step in this is basically we're going to sort them. And sort will basically just append all of the names that are the same into the same spot in the file. There's a command called unique, which basically says, oh, I only want one of each of these. And the command word count, which I already showed you, will tell you how many there are. So I wasn't really interested in who the users were that were using Maple. I was just interested in how many of them are unique. So if we go off and actually run that command, maybe I should do it one step at a time. Oops. So you can see that Alan Banton from McMaster used it, you know, whatever, 10, 15 times. But the nice thing is they're now all sorted alphabetically. So if I do that again, now you're getting just one of them. And if I build it up again and say, pipe that into word count, you find that there was 96 unique users. So the purpose of the example was really just to show you that with the command line, you can kind of break your data into little steps and do some processing chunk at a time. Or once you've actually built up sort of some knowledge as to what it is you want to do with that particular data file, you can then create a command, a shell script, that stores all of the intermediate things you've just done. And now you've got something you can run on a brand new data set and basically not have to do a lot of work to get, you know, a result out of it. So the example here would be, and I don't know if I'll bother running it, but this bottom one here is basically doing what we just did all at once. All right. So if I was to take that, store it in a file, give it execute permission, that now becomes a command that I can call from the shell and process data. Okay. You know, what would you do to make this better? You would say, you know, probably the log file name would become an argument so that when you run that script, you're giving it basically a different file name each time because you're going to have different data sets you might want to run this on. You might want to not actually pull these things in from files, the little programs we've written, the two awk programs. You might want to actually do that all in the command line so that it's self-contained. But that's basically what we were trying to show you here. Okay. Joe, I think it's going to be back to you at this point. And that's unreadable. So this you guys don't really need to know about other than its resources for going into some of this stuff. In particular, the top one talks about the Linux command line, file redirection, all these nice things you can do. I've got a link here on GNUplot because I know Callum's going to have you guys doing some work with GNUplot. More in-depth stuff on Bash, which is the shell we've been using here. And then some articles on awk and sed. I'll just mention what sed is. So sed is a stream editor. So again, it's when you have large data sets, I mean, you have to know that there's a historical part to this, and that was that it wasn't always the case that people had, you know, oodles of memory on their computers, and so they're trying to process data files that were larger than the amount of memory they had. And so sed basically is like the ed editor or part of VI, the command set that's in VI, if you know VI. And basically, it's just a stream editor. So it applies whatever commands you have in that file one line at a time. So it's similar to awk in some ways. But you may end up needing it. You may never need it. But I thought at least I'd mention it to you. So I'm going to hand things over to Joel again.
Okay, don't worry about copying these down. We'll be making the slides available after.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to give you a little bit of a picture view of how our network works with the machines you're likely to use. So basically, we have three internet connections. They're redundant links, so hopefully the internet doesn't go out ever. It does sometimes, but there's beings beyond our powers at work there. So basically, we've got Atria and Cogent, which are our internet providers. We've also got the Orion Research Network. In Canada, it's referred to as Canary. In the US, it's referred to as Internet 2. Basically, it's a link to all the university institutions on a much faster rate. So basically, you'll be coming in from residence, which will look like you're coming from the internet, or you'll be coming from the wireless. So there's various servers. There's Proteus, which I mentioned. It's basically a server that's set up just for Sci use. It's set up the exact same as the laptops that we gave out. There's Outlook Web Access. So this URL gets you your email address. You would have got a white sheet of paper with password on it when you arrived, and that's the password you'll use there. Some of you have reset that password. So there's various printers. There's one outside here. There's one upstairs. There's lots of other servers that we have. One of them is Mars, which if you're coming in, if you're SSHing to perimeterinstitute.ca from outside, that gets you to Mars, and then from there you'll have to go to Proteus. So speaking of SSH, So here's how you SSH. So if you're in this terminal, you just type SSH and then your username at whatever server you're trying to get to. So for instance, if I was trying to get to Proteus, I would type SSH jstoutner at proteus.pi.local. SCP is a method for copying files between machines. So if you have a machine on your or a file on your laptop and you want to get it to the Proteus server, you SCP the file name on your laptop and then your username at Proteus, and then you have this little colon here, and then you put the path on the server. And that works the other way around as well, so you can copy a file on the server to your local machine. You can run graphical programs as well over SSH, so I can run Firefox on the server. Yes? So SSH stands for Secure Shell. So basically, if I want a terminal on the server, I would SSH to the server. So it's basically what we did with PuTTY here. So John logged into Proteus, and this PuTTY is a method of SSHing. Yeah, SSH uses RSA encryption to make everything secure as well. So you can run graphical programs over an SSH connection. So with Linux or Mac users, you just stick in -X. We'll forward the graphical to your machine. Or with Windows users, you can use Cygwin, or what I use is Xmin and PuTTY. And I mentioned from outside of Perimeter, so at your residence, you'll have to SSH to perimeterinstitute.ca, and then from there go to Proteus, or connect over the VPN, which I'll get into later. So I'll just give you a quick example of how to use a graphical program. So the first thing I do is I start this Xmin program. And is it started yet? Yeah, so it just starts as a little icon down here. And so I want to connect to myself at Proteus. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go down to the SSH section here. Under X11, I'm going to say enable X11 forwarding. I'm going to open. I type my password. So connecting to Proteus, it's that password you got on that piece of paper. We refer to it as your perimeter password, as opposed to your laptop password. So from here, I can run an xterm. And it should just, and there's my xterm. I can run Firefox on the server. Which apparently I've already got it running. What's another graphical program I can run?
Xclock.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's clock running on Proteus. So I can also I can cascade these, so I can SSH -X. To Mars. So I don't have, with SSH, you don't have to specify a username. If you don't specify a username, it just uses whatever username you're currently using. So Mars is the machine you would get to from outside. So now I can run X clock on Mars and see it on my machine.
Of course, it gets slower each time.
Yes, it does. And you'll find it will be slow if you're connecting from home. It will be quite slow. So I can SCP files. So what's a good file? Let's SCP that file. And I'm going to put it on let's just put it in slash temp. So slash temp on a Linux machine is just a scratch area you can use. We have scripts that will delete any files that are in there older than a week. So it's just an area that's local to the machine. Because on Proteus, the directory that is your home directory will be the storage on the servers, shared storage. So I'm going to copy this file to the machine Callisto, and I'm going to put it in slash temp. So it asks me for my password, and it sticks the file there. If I want to copy a directory, I can do that. And it complains that it's not a regular file. And well, it's not. It's a directory. So I'm going to try and figure out here. So the man pages are a way of getting information about a command. So if I don't know, if I know a program does something I want it to do, and I don't know how to do it with that program, I can just look at the man page. And it gives me lots of information about how to use that command. And as you can see here, dash little r means recursively copy. So if I just go back and edit this command and stick in dash r, there it's copied the directory. Oh, recursive is basically it copies the directory and it copies everything inside the directory recursively. So basically, if you have subdirectories of subdirectories, it'll copy the entire path. So email, we send out a weekly email of what's going on in the institute. Well, not us, the admin staff do. So you'll want to check your email just so you know what's going on. I think the tutors will be using your perimeter email address as well. So to check your email, you just go to owa.perimeterinstitute.ca. That works from wherever you are as long as you have an internet connection. And you just use your username and password. So your email address is your username at perimeterinstitute.ca. So I mentioned the VPN before. So we use OpenVPN for a VPN technology. What a VPN does is it gives you an IP address at the institute. So basically, any traffic that you're sending goes through a basically it's like a pipe between your machine and perimeter. So all the traffic to Proteus would go through that pipe. All the traffic to your email would go through that pipe. The internet traffic will not go through that pipe. So it just basically makes your machine look like it's at PI to our servers.
Question.
Yep.
Can two clients using OpenVPN talk to each other, or do you have them firewalled apart from each other?
I believe they should be able to talk to each other.
Okay.
I don't know offhand. I'd have to look at it. Where was I?
Sorry.
So you can connect, so the internet, to access the internet, so the help requests and the wikis, you'd have to use the VPN to do that. If you're off-site. So under Linux, we've got it set up as openvpn.pi. It's just a command you run in the terminal, and it'll ask you for your perimeter username and password to connect. I heard on Friday afternoon that there may be an issue with this, so I'll be looking at that today. So Mac users, we've licensed a program called Viscosity VPN. If you want to get it installed, come see us and we'll install it. Windows users, OpenVPN GUI. It can be a little hard to set up, so if you want to come see us, you can come see us and we'll help you set it up. Otherwise, you can go to my personal area on Perimeter's site, and you can either follow through to the link, or you can just type in the URL, and there's instructions there. So Skype audio setup, it's a little difficult with these laptops. There's a bug in Skype that you have to do some convoluted stuff. The instructions are there. You can look at them later. Any questions?
Yes.
Yeah, can you copy and paste in command line?
With PuTTY and the terminal, you can with selecting and stuff. As using the keyboard, I don't know.
Shift insert works to paste, but Control C. Acts as an interrupt, so you can't use Control C.
So you saw me earlier, I highlighted. With PuTTY, it's fairly simple. I just highlight and right click. With GNOME Terminal, you can highlight and hit both buttons at the same time. It's kind of difficult to do.
Which both buttons? Oh, on the mouse.
Yeah, right and left click. Or you can right-click and say copy or right-click paste. I think there's keyboard shortcuts. I don't know if they're Google is your friend. So.
I just looked it up. Control-Shift-C and Control-Shift-V.
Yeah.
You just have to add a shift to it because there's historical reasons why Control-C and V are kind of already taken.
So basically, Google is your friend. If you stick in what you're trying to do and append Linux, it usually comes up before you're after.
Are there any more questions?
I believe there's a problem with permissions on Proteus for us. I've not been able to log in using Linux.
Okay, we'll have a look at that.
I can log in, but I can't access my home directory.
Yeah. That's an only issue. We'll look at it. We'll get it fixed.
Okay.
Might
have to talk to
you. Yeah.
Well, you can use it. Just can't go into your own home directory. It sends you to the root.
Okay. Well, I reckon we should have a 15-minute break for this now.
Okay.
I think I'm
supposed to remember. Thanks.